Every Stearns & Foster mattress is handcrafted with the finest materials for irresistible comfort every single night. Now, save up to $800 on select adjustable mattress sets only at stearnsandfoster.com. Lesser savings may apply.
My name is Brenda, and welcome to Horrifying History, where you will hear about the unexplained and supernatural happenings that have stained the pages of history. Winston Churchill was a man very well known in history. He was a British statesman, public speaker, and author who was Prime Minister of the United Kingdom from 1940 to 1945 and from 1951 to 1955. He rallied his people during World War II, and this helped lead his country to victory. But after he rose in political prominence before World War I, Winston gained the reputation of having erratic judgment at times. People started to distance themselves from him until his response to Adolf Hitler's actions helped develop a coalition with the United States and Russia. But after that relationship broke down, Winston was the one who warned the Western world of the expansionist threat of the Soviet Union. This changed the geopolitical landscape of the world forever. Winston was considered to be an honorable, charming, but stubborn man. He was known to be defiant, arrogant, and a bit conceited. He was never afraid to take a risk, but he also stood firm on his beliefs. That's why many think he became a supporter of a woman known as the last person in Britain convicted as a witch, Helen Duncan. So snuggle in, my spooky friends. You are about to hear the tale of how former British Prime Minister Winston Churchill became forever linked to a legal case of wartime witchcraft. World War II is considered to be one of the most significant and influential events of the 20th century. The total military and civilian deaths are estimated to be between 70 to 85 million people, which was about 3% of the total global population of the time. It also brought on the nuclear age due to the Manhattan Project creating atomic bombs that were dropped on Japan, and this led to a nuclear arms race that to some level still occurs today. It also started a major cultural shift. With many men away at war, women started to join the workforce for the first time. Opportunities started to open up for women and minorities that they never had previously. But even so, old prejudices and policies still persisted. Some of these are things that you heard about, and some you likely haven't. One of these resulted in a lengthy and controversial trial that occurred in 1944 under the 1735 Witchcraft Act. Victoria Helen McCrae Duncan, who later became known as Helen Duncan or Hellish Nell, was born in Perthshire in central Scotland on November 25, 1897. Her father, Archibald, was a slate mason, and her mother, Isabella, was a homemaker. They all lived happy lives together without any sort of strangeness until little Helen started to go to school. It was here that she later claimed she scared her fellow classmates with her abilities. She would display hysterical behavior as she would make dire prophecies. Now this horrified her mother, Isabella, who was a very devoted member of the local Presbyterian church, and she was very pleased when Helen decided to leave school. After she was done with her school life, Helen got a job at the Dungie Royal Infirmary, which was a local teaching hospital. It was soon afterwards that she met Henry Duncan, who was a wounded war veteran and an unemployed cabinet maker. The two were married when Helen was 19, and they quickly started their family together. Now, this is where the story starts to shift, depending on the sources you seek. In some, Henry knew that Helen had a talent as a clairvoyant, and he was very supportive of her developing her alleged paranormal skill set. This was because Henry was a devoted spiritualist himself. Now, in other tales, the couple had 6 children together. Due to Henry's unemployment, Helen had to pick up the slack. She worked at various menial jobs, but the money was still tight in the household. Since Helen had previously shown interest in reading tea leaves, Henry pushed her to start charging people for the predictions she was giving. He encouraged her to start holding seances and charge the attendees. Helen became a traveling medium, and this business venture was a massive success. After all, World War I had just ended. Approximately 9 million people were killed, which was about 15% of all combatants. Even though civilians were not killed on the massive scale that they were in World War II, they were also targets in World War I. But it wasn't just the fighting that killed civilians. Famine and disease became prevalent by the end of World War I, and this resulted in an estimated 20 million people dying from things like the Spanish flu epidemic. With all of this, there were plenty of people who were willing to pay to get in contact with their loved ones who passed away. Often, families only received a telegram to tell them that their soldier was killed. They couldn't go to where their loved one was to mourn their death. Many times, there wasn't even a body to bury. Countless people started to flock to seances, spiritual healers, mediums, clairvoyants, all in a way to connect with the loved ones they lost and to be able to mourn them. Now, this was the perfect situation for Helen to make some dollars versus the pennies that she was making for tea reading predictions. In 1926, Helen claimed that she developed her abilities from just being a clairvoyant to becoming a physical medium. Physical mediumship is said to be a very dangerous gift to have. It is when a spirit is able to physically speak through, interact with, or physically affect a medium. Through the correct medium, it is said that a spirit can manipulate energies or energy systems to communicate. Now, this can come in the form of loud rapping noises, materialization of spirits, or objects materializing as the spirit uses the medium as a source of power to do these sort of things. In Helen's case, she claimed that she was able to allow the spirits of the dead to materialize by emitting ectoplasm from her mouth. Ectoplasm is said to be a substance that is spiritual energy that is expelled by physical mediums. It's said to look like a gauze-like substance, and ghosts are able to cover their bodies with this to allow them to interact in our physical plane. So after hearing that description, my spooky friends, I have a feeling that a few of you are a little suspicious. And you should be. In 1928, a photographer attended a series of seances held in Helen and Henry's home. During the seance, he took photos of Helen right at the point that Helen allegedly materialized spirits, which included her spirit guide, Peggy. If you all decide to Google these photos, there is absolutely no doubt that Helen was a fake. The spirit in the photos is clearly some sort of doll that kind of looks like Billy the Puppet from the Saw horror movie franchise. There's no mistaking this. It's clearly a painted papier-mâché mask that is covered by a sheet. It has another sheet around its neck, and the end of that is shoved up Helen's nose. Now, honestly, my spooky friends, the believability factor in these photos is very, very low. In 1931, the College of Psychic Studies in London decided to get involved. Known at the time as the London Spiritualist Alliance, this organization still exists today, and it has the same mission statement: to study psychic and spiritualistic phenomena. What they discovered was that Helen's ectoplasm was actually cheesecloth, paper, and toilet paper that were all mixed up and then held together with egg whites. The group came to the conclusion that Helen would swallow this sometime before her show and then regurgitate it on command. So how did they come to this conclusion? A piece of ectoplasm that Helen allegedly produced was obtained and placed into a bottle of distilled water. The bottle was then given to Harry Price, who was a psychic researcher who gained prominence for exposing fraudulent spiritualistic mediums. Harry gave the sample to a chemist who was able to discover the true composition of the ectoplasm, and then he was able to recreate the same ectoplasm. So after this, Harry paid Helen to conduct several test seances for him to study. When he informed her that he wanted to X-ray her, Helen reacted very badly. She became violent and she ran from the laboratory. She then started to make a scene outside the building and became so worked up that her husband had to restrain her. As Harry said in the report he completed about Helen, and I quote, "At the conclusion of the fourth seance, we led the medium to a settee and called for the apparatus. At the sight of it, the lady promptly went into a trance. She recovered but refused to be X-rayed. Her husband went up to her and told her it was painless. She jumped up and gave him a smashing blow on the face, which sent him reeling. She then went for Dr. William Brown, who was present. He dodged the blow. Mrs. Duncan, without the slightest warning, dashed out into the street, had an attack of hysteria, and began to tear her seance garment to pieces. She clutched the railings and screamed and screamed. Her husband tried to pacify her. It was useless. I leave the reader to visualize the scene. A 17-stone woman clad in black sateen tights, locked to the railings, screaming at the top of her voice. A crowd collected and the police arrived. The medical men with us explained the position and prevented them from fetching the ambulance. We got her back into the laboratory and at once she demanded to be X-rayed. In reply, Dr. William Brown turned to Mr. Duncan and asked him to turn out his pockets. He refused and would not allow us to search him. There is no question that his wife had passed him the cheesecloth in the street. However, they gave us another seance and the control said that we could cut off a piece of teleplays when it appeared. The sight of half a dozen men, each with a pair of scissors, waiting for the word, was amusing. It came and we all jumped. One of the doctors got a hold of the stuff and secured a piece. The medium screamed and the rest of the teleplays went down her throat. This time it wasn't cheesecloth. It proved to be paper soaked with egg and folded into a flattened tube. So none of you should be surprised that Helen was arrested less than 2 years later. In a seance held in Edinburgh on January 2, 1933, Helen allegedly called the spirit of a young girl named Peggy into the room where the seance was held. An attendee grabbed the ghostly girl to find out it wasn't a ghost at all. The fake ghost was made from an undervest and the police were called. Helen was charged and convicted of fraudulent mediumship on May 11, 1933. It was suspected that Henry was her accomplice in this, but ultimately he wasn't convicted. Helen's punishment was a fine of £10.
This podcast is sponsored by Monarch Money. Are you saving to reach your financial goals? Reaching those goals isn't just about getting more money, but by managing what you have. And the best way to manage your money? Monarch Money. Monarch Money is a new kind of finance app that's intuitive, powerful, ad-free, and takes the headaches out of budgeting. Try it free when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. Monarch puts all your accounts, investments, transactions, and finances at your fingertips. With a complete view of your finances, you'll gain insights on your spending and find new ways to save. Plus, Monarch lets you customize your dashboard, collaborate with your partner, set custom budgets and goals, and track your progress toward them. See why Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it, and why the Wall Street Journal named Monarch Money the best budgeting app overall. Get a 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. That's monarchmoney.com/podcast for your free trial. monarchmoney.com/podcast.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At this point of our story, you're likely thinking, How did Winston Churchill get himself mixed up with this woman who was clearly a fake? The easiest answer for this is that not everyone believed she was a fake. By the time the 1940s hit, Helen had been presenting herself as a powerful and successful medium for years. She had been giving seances across the country, both during peace and during wartime. The fallout of World War I helped her create and build her business, but World War II made it grow exponentially as distraught loved ones flocked to her in hopes to contact their dead loved ones. Naturally, Helen was happy to oblige. She was seen by many as a woman who had a direct link to the afterlife, which resulted in the money rolling in. But then, Helen said something that would change everything. In November of 1941, World War II was raging. Germany had invaded Russia in June of that year, resulting in the largest military operation in history with the largest casualty rate. The Allied forces then started to move in, and Winston Churchill promised Joseph Stalin, the leader of the Soviets, that convoys would sail to Russia every 10 days. But then, at a seance that Helen put on in Hampshire, England, she claimed that a spirit of a sailor materialized. This sailor said that his ship, the HMS Barham, had sunk. The problem with this was that the sinking of the HMS Barham was only revealed in strict confidence to the relatives of those who were killed. This was not told to the public until late January of the following year, and now the Navy was very interested in how this information made its way to Helen. Especially since at that seance, she produced a sailor's hatband that had the words HMS Barham on it. She used this as proof that she connected with this dead sailor spirit. Now, someone contacted the local police, and they passed this information up the chain until it hit the Home Office in London. It was flagged as a security breach, and this set off alarm bells with naval intelligence. After all, they thought they prevented this information from getting out. They were concerned that the news of this ship sinking would shake public morale because this ship had actually exploded after being torpedoed 3 times by a German submarine. 859 lives were lost. So Helen was placed under witch watch for the next 2 years as the Allied invasion of France and D-Day was being planned and then implemented. Then one day, the authorities decided to act. They became fearful that Helen may somehow see the proposed Normandy landing sites or the Allied plans and then give this information out early. They felt they couldn't risk this possible breach of security and how it could destroy all of their plans. On January 14, 1944, 2 military lieutenants went to one of Helen's seances. When there, one of them, Lieutenant Worth, was told by Helen that the spirit who came to the seance was his dead aunt. But the thing was that Worth had no dead aunt, and he was pissed. So he decided to report Helen for fraud to the local police. That was all the authorities needed. When Helen held another seance on January 19th, 2 plainclothes police officers were present. Helen was arrested and charged under Section 4 of the Vagrancy Act of 1824, which was considered to be a minor offense. But after discovering that Section 4 of the Witchcraft Act of 1735 covered fraudulent spiritual activities, which would result in a jury trial, the authorities found their way to shut Helen down. Just to be sure, they charged those around her too. Charged with conspiracy to contravene the Witchcraft Act was Ernest and Elizabeth Homer, who operated the psychic center that Helen worked out of, and Francis Brown, who was Helen's agent. They were also charged with obtaining money by false pretenses and public mischief. After all, authorities were very afraid that Helen would continue to reveal classified information, no matter what her source was, either spiritual or otherwise. So as you all can imagine, this court case was controversial. More than 40 people testified for Helen and gave evidence that they felt that she was genuine. One of these was Alfred Dodd, who was a well-known historian and a senior Freemason. He told the court that he was positive that Helen was authentic. Now, personally, my spooky friends, I think this was not the best trial strategy. After all, the prosecution was trying to prove that she broke the Witchcraft Act, which made it illegal to speak to spirits either legitimately or fraudulently. It was not the best move to have 40 people go on the stand to say that she did commune with spirits. But the prosecution did have a few issues. The first one was when the police raided Helen's home in search of evidence, they found nothing of what Helen was allegedly using to make ectoplasm. All of their fraud charges were supported only by people who claimed that Helen was the real thing. Now Helen, she wanted to prove herself in court she was legitimate. She wanted to show her powers and prove she wasn't a fraud, but she wasn't allowed to. The jury, though, they were convinced. Helen was found guilty and sentenced to serve 9 months in jail. Her agent was also found guilty and had to serve 4 months in jail, and the two that owned the psychic center, they were given an offer to enter into a reconnaissance. They took that deal. Meanwhile, the press was having a field day with this one. Helen was given the name of Hellish Nell, and sensational claims started to appear in the media about her and her life. This only strengthened her believers' resolve to stand by Helen. She was being called their goddess, and they would constantly speak to the press about her being wrongly imprisoned. It was here that Winston Churchill became involved. Winston was a man known to be deeply interested in logic and science, but he was also curious about supernatural phenomena. He also had his horrible side too, which included believing in white supremacy and imperialism, but even he could see how morally misguided and financially wasteful this case was. After the press reported on the verdict of this case, Winston wrote a memo to his home secretary where he complained about the misuse of court resources in the case, which he said was obsolete tomfoolery. He then asked for a report on why the Witchcraft Act of 1735 was used in a modern court of justice. He wanted to know what the cost of this was for the government, and he found out some very interesting details, including witnesses were brought in and put up in expensive hotels on the government's dime, and that court staff had been kept busy with this to the detriment of more valid court cases. Let's just say that Winston was not pleased. Helen was the last person in Britain to be jailed under the Witchcraft Act, but not the last person charged. Jane York from East London was charged under this same legislation a couple months later. She was only bound by a fine of £5 and to be under good behavior for the next 3 years. That was vastly different than Helen being found guilty of fraud, not witchcraft, and being taken away from society due to the paranoia of the security of state. When Helen was released in 1945, she promised never to hold another séance again. But she did, and was arrested again in 1956. She died shortly afterwards at her home, but it was her experience that helped repeal the Witchcraft Act and helped create the Fraudulent Mediums Act of 1951. This happened very shortly after Winston returned to Downing Street as Prime Minister for the second time. Helen did try to appeal her conviction, but failed. Today, many still argue that Helen should be pardoned because the British state took a very heavy hand to her and not others. In a statement from the British Home Office, they said, and I quote, "It is extremely rare for the Home Secretary to use his power to recommend a posthumous free pardon. In modern times, only one such pardon has been recommended. It would also be particularly difficult to apply current knowledge, morality, and other criteria to events which took place some 50 years ago." But Helen's family thinks different. For years, they have been trying to have her pardoned. In an interview in 2007 by The Guardian newspaper, correspondent Severin Carell spoke to Mary Martin, who is Helen's granddaughter. Mary knew her grandmother as a person with a gift and thinks her conviction was ludicrous. She spoke about the time that Helen became an accused witch. She explained that when these stories hit the press, she and her family would be called things like witch's spawn. She also stated that Helen had two sons in the Navy and one in the Royal Air Force. Her husband also served in the Army, and Mary stated that these facts alone would have prevented her grandmother from spreading war secrets. She told The Guardian, and I quote, "She was an ordinary woman with a gift. I just want her name cleared. She was never given a chance to defend herself at the trial. It was such an injustice. While all of this was happening, our troops were preparing for D-Day. why did they spend 10 days trying an old lady for witchcraft? So far, all attempts to pardon Helen has failed, but for thousands of people who were convicted of witchcraft, there is hope. Last year, a governmental representative launched a member's bill to, and I quote, right the historical wrong of witchcraft convictions. The goal of this is to give legal pardons for those convicted in past centuries. Approximately 4,000 Scottish citizens were vilified, convicted, or executed under the witchcraft of 1563. Of these, 85% were women, and Helen is considered to be one of them. There are also many other famed alleged witches on this list, which includes Janet Douglas, who was falsely accused of witchcraft by her brother, King James V, as part of his vendetta against his own family. She was arrested on fake charges, tortured along with those close to her to get evidence, and then was burned alive with her young son being forced to watch. As said by Natalie Dawn, who was the individual who submitted this bill, and I quote in part, by issuing official pardons for all those convicted of witchcraft, we will be sending a strong message to the wide world, some parts of which women still face persecution of being accused of witchcraft, that Scotland recognizes what happened to these people as a deplorable miscarriage of justice. Thank you all for joining me for our latest episode of Horrifying History. What are your thoughts on Helen? Do you think she should be pardoned, or do you think that her judgment should stand? Let us know your thoughts on Facebook at Horrifying History, on Instagram and Threads at Horrifying_History, or on Twitter at HorrifyingHIST1. Now, if you haven't done it yet, please remember to hit the subscribe button for our podcast. For when you do, not only do you let other people know about our show, but you download our next episode on its day of release. It's a great way not to miss our next episode, which is a request from my mom, Lizzie Halliday, the worst woman on earth. As you all can see, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. If you would love to take home a piece of Horrifying History, you really should check out our store. You'll find some great items by going to redbubble.com and by searching for Horrifying History in their search box. And if you want to get a bunch of amazing perks like ad-free episodes, free merchandise, additional episodes, and much, much more, join our fan club on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/horrifyinghistory to sign up today. Thank you all for listening, and until next time.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.